Hey, what's going on, my friend? Get the microphone where it's supposed to be. Are you set to go? I am. Yeah? Cool. Feeling good today? Is your trigger finger nimble? Good. Okay. Well, then get it into the correct position for striking. Okay? All right. Let's just get down to it here. I'll give you the three S's. You give me the music. I'll give you the podcast, and we're off to the races. All right. Here we go. Star, smile, strong. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. Don't forget, listening, always paramount, but you can't forget the small details, and that means hitting the streets, telling your friends, telling your family, tell anybody who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Don't forget to subscribe and to bookmark this as well, whatever it is, to make sure that you and everyone else around you knows that the accessibility of this podcast is widespread. No excuses why you can't find it. If you want to find more, you can go to WGNRadio.com, hit the podcast section, then hit the prompt for this podcast, and my gosh, will you find more. Just keep scrolling down and loading more, scrolling down and loading more. We've been doing this since 2016. We've been doing this since May of 2016. We've been doing this now for 421 episodes. Is that right? Is that right, Reg? Is it 421 or is it 420? I don't know. It's a good question. I don't want to be wrong on that. Can you actually check that? Yeah, I mean, my goodness, I don't want to say the wrong number. I'm pretty sure it's 421. But let's check that. Yeah, it's 421. Whew. Okay. I know there's a, you know, I mean, the numbers here, I mean, you know, the number has to be exact or everything falls off the rails. Number 421. Yes, it's been confirmed. And yes, longtime fans will know that there is one missing episode that early on in the recording of this, I record these ahead. They're not live, obviously. Early on, an episode was omitted, and we just continued. And so there is a lost episode that still exists, and I have to decide if and when it will ever be released. Maybe it forever just becomes that mysterious podcast. Was it omitted for a reason? Perhaps. Was it just a mistake? Was it just an oversight, or was it deliberately overlooked? Ooh, a new wrinkle. Something for you to ponder. But regardless, we are at 421. And cool thing happened a couple of weeks ago. Right in my backyard. I know that's a phrase that we all use maybe sometimes. Oh, it's right in my backyard. But this literally happened in my backyard. I have a nice backyard, lots of room, not very wide, but long. I don't know what the dimensions are, but it's a nice backyard, and it's almost as backyard's probably longer than the stamp of the house, in fact. But and so over the years we have done some things with it, put a nice little a small little patio with a fire pit in about, wow, what is it now? I think it was 2011 when we did that. Whew, that's 13 years ago. Wow. Holy smokes. We were ahead of the fire pit trend. Now everybody with the fire pit. Everybody's got the fire pit. They got the, you know, the kind you can just buy. It's, you know, it's not a stone one, or it's not built in. It's portable. You could take it around. Now there's all new fire pit technologies. But yeah, I was ahead on the fire pit trend. Not to say I invented it by any means, but now you see everybody's got some kind of fire pit in their backyard. I got my cue from vacationing in. Was it? I think it was Vail. Either Vail or Aspen. And we stayed at a hotel, and they had fire pits there. And I just fell in love with them. I'm not a big camper. So I never was really around fire. You know, it wasn't like build a fire. I've been in the outdoors to some extent, but I'm not a big camper. I'm not a big fisherman. I try to go out into nature as much as I can, but it's not like it's a regular thing, a part of my life. It hasn't, we didn't have a cabin somewhere, or we didn't have a boat. We didn't go fishing or hunting, you know, didn't do all our hiking. I mean, now I try to go hiking a lot around the areas and stuff like that. But, it wasn't a part of my life as for some people. They've been in boats their whole life. They've been out camping and making fires their whole life. It's no big deal. I was a city boy in many regards. And so when I was exposed to this, I was like, wow, I really like this. And so when we were talking about putting something in the back, I was like, boy, I would love to have a fire pit. And so it wasn't the, like I said, 10, you know, 13 years ago or so, it wasn't as prevalent, it wasn't as popular to have it in your backyard. Now, like I said, I didn't invent it. People have had them. I understand that. But now it's like, whoa. I was like, hey, we were ahead of that. We were ahead of that trend. But anyway, so I went out a couple weeks ago. Weather was nice. And, you know, you've got to, you always got to do upkeep. I mean, it's not, the thing about if you own a home is, you know, you've always got to do upkeep. You've always got to be looking around to make sure that something isn't broke, something isn't hanging, something didn't happen. I think I told you the story a couple of weeks or a couple of months ago. I went back there after we were away on a vacation and found that our fence, our wooden fence, had been blown down by the wind when we were away. Had no idea for about a week and a half. So you always have to be diligent. And especially in the summer, because there's a lot more going on. You know, not only is the weather, you know, something that you have to always contend with, and possible damage that it can do, even wind. My gosh, it's been kind of windy here. That's the name, right? In the Chicago area. And my goodness, branches of trees. Not just big, not giant ones necessarily, but small ones in record numbers. I woke up one morning and the grass in the front and the back was just filled with branches. It's like, what the heck happened here? So you always have to be diligent. Thankfully, no damage was done, but you know, it looks kind of messy, so you got to pick it up. So you're always doing something. And like I said, in the summer, there's constant. It's the weather, you know. It's wildlife can do things, right? I've had, you know, wasp nests and and raccoons in garages and in attics and possums and you name it, you know. And then there's always the weeds. I mean, the one thing that's nice about having a yard is that, you know, it's a nice place to go. It's a nice little retreat. Ours is nice and private. We've got this little patio that we can go to at night. It's kind of quiet back there or during the day, and a little landscaping. So, you know, but then when you do that, it requires upkeep. Everything's upkeep. Oh, it'd be so nice if you could just do these things and just stay like a picture. I was last week. I was outside. I'd been doing a play, and I kind of wrenched my back. I have some back issues every now and then. It doesn't happen all the time, but when it happens, it really hurts. And so, perfect example. So, we had a fire. And the next morning, I wanted to clean out the fire pit. So, you know me, I can't leave all the ashes and the burnt embers in there. Got to clean out that fire pit. And I do this all the time, you know, and I have it's a somewhat deep fire pit, not big. It's just a square, but I use a shovel and a broom to sweep up the dust and the wood that's burned, the little scraps. And I mean, it's not just bending to do this, but bending to do anything, picking up weeds. I mean, just, you know, whatever it is. And it was early in the morning. I don't know if I was, maybe I just was stiff. I hadn't moved around enough and my muscles weren't, after laying down in bed for, you know, sleeping. But I went out earlier in the morning and to do that. And I simply just bent over and, I had this pain across my entire lower back. And it really was settling on the right side where the pain was. And I was like, are you kidding me? We had an opening night on Friday. And I didn't have an understudy for this play. I mean, and I was the lead in the play. I mean, I couldn't just say, oh, well, my back hurts. Thankfully, it happened on a Tuesday. Still had to go to rehearsals and everything on Wednesday, Thursday, and then opening on Friday. rested it, applied as much, salon pause and icy hot and rubbing and rub downs and laying on the floor, just anything, just to be able to straighten up. I didn't even let anybody in the play know that I was hurting. And thankfully, by the time the show started, it had subsided. And it's funny how the brain works, because then once, the play went on, I didn't feel anything at all in my back. But then once the play ended and I got in my car to drive home and I got out of the car, I was like, "Arr!" So, you know, they always say that back pain is psychosomatic and it's in your head and it just deals with stress. Who knows what it is? But my point is that, you're always doing upkeep. And so I went out a couple weeks ago. So my point is, because my back, I was like, well, you know, I usually go out and pick the weeds to make sure that the yard looks nice. As much as we have some mulch and things like that around, weeds still come up, and it had rained here quite a bit for a while. But I can't bend to pick up these weeds. You know, I mean, I don't want. I mean, my back is just healing now, and so for the 2 weeks that the play was on, I just kind of let the weeds go. And sure enough. Thankfully, the weather was dry after that, but, you know, the weeds find a way to grow. Some were kind of high, like, whoa, how did this thing spring up? It's amazing how fast weeds grow. I don't know what the need for weeds are. There must be some, or they wouldn't be around, right? Maybe there is some you know, environmental thing that weeds do that we need them for. I don't know if they feed animal. I don't know if feed insects. I don't know what happens, but my gosh, do weeds grow fast. So because I was taking care of my back here and didn't want to either, you know, keep the injury going or re-injuring or making it worse, I said, well, I'm not going to be able to do my weekly weed picking that I do, which of course involves bending. I wanted to keep my back free from any overexertion as possible because of the play. So I let the weeds go for a couple weeks. Well, holy cow. So the play ended, and wow, like I said, there were some weeds that were as high as tall bushes. I'm like, this has only been 2 weeks. Amazing. Unbelievable. I was out there for about 3 hours. You know, because it was 2 weeks worth of weeds when I finally did it. But in between, say after the first week that I was, you know, on hiatus from weed picking, I just wanted to get a sense of what's going on back here. You know, it's like I said before, you always got to do some upkeep. You always got to just look around. How are things going back here, back in the yard, you know, around the house? Obviously, the cicadas have made life interesting. They're sitting around the shells and even dead ones for some reason. I don't know. They must have a very short lifespan. But so I'm walking to the back. As I said, our yard is long. It's not wide or as wide. It's longer than it is wider. And there's a detached garage with a driveway. And then the patio is somewhat behind the area in the back, then behind the garage. So the patio is kind of hidden if you're looking when you first walk into the yard, and you enter the yard part, because it's a little to the left. And so I'm just looking around, trying to see, how this is week one of the 2 week weed hiatus. And I'm just looking around to see, well, how bad are the weed, is the weed situation here? In week one, it wasn't too bad. But once again, you know, these weeds grow so fast that, you know, they probably at that point were deceptively there. They were deceptively high. They weren't. They were in the midst of you know, one more growth spurt, and it'd be like, whoa. So I think week one, I walked around going, oh, well, this isn't too bad. I don't feel too bad about not pulling the weeds here. These things don't look too bad. There's a few little areas, I get it, but it's not overwhelming. And so hopefully things can stay at this stage for another week, because I don't want to test my back, and then I'll get to it. And as I'm walking, I get past the garage part, and I turn slightly to the left to go to see how things are out at the patio. And I happen to see we've got a lot of different kind of, you know, plants and bushes and flowers. And at the corner of the garage, near a bush, and I think, I don't know if it's, what kind of a plant it is. It's big. It's got a beautiful purple, I don't know if it's an orchid or a lily. I'm not sure what it is. But big green, long, triangular leaves, and then these big, beautiful, they're very, you know, delicate purple. I don't know if they're, I don't think they're orchids or lilies. I'm not sure what they are, but they're very pretty. They have a very short life. They bloom and then they die within a week or so. But conveniently hidden, amidst the leaning against the garage, the corner of the garage, which is hidden, as I said, by some bush and some foliage, I just happened to turn my head, and I see something like brown in there. And so my first reaction is, nyeh. You know, I'm deathly afraid. I mean, but it's daytime, right? Most of the wildlife comes out at night, you know, whether it's possums or raccoons. We've had a couple of foxes that have come out during the day, and the foxes can be a little testy. So that's what scared me a little, because I wasn't sure what was there. I knew something was there. Some type of wildlife was there. Now I had to ascertain as to what exactly it was. And so it caught my eye. It was very still. And so I just kind of gingerly walked around and looked. And then I saw this emerging, as I got a different view of it from the side. Because it was hidden from straight view fairly well, but behind this bush and this plant and the garage, it was hidden fairly well. But then, as you moved out more to the right, the garage was open, and that's where you could see it. So I'm getting a better look, and I suddenly see this brown kind of trunk, and it's laying down. I see this brown trunk, and I see little white spots, and I don't see the head or the face yet. I'm just seeing the back, and I see the small little tail. And as I continue to go to the right and move around, I see that it's a baby deer, and it was just, oh, okay, and he or she, I'm not sure what it is. I had to go online. Because how do you tell, right? I wasn't going to get that close. I guess from when the fawn, and I didn't know this, fawn sounds like a feminine word, right? There's if you learn, you know, foreign languages, you know that there's masculine and feminine words. Fawn sounds like a feminine word, right? But apparently that the word fawn can referred to any baby deer, which I wasn't aware of that until I started to look it up here. You got to love the internet. And so so I look at the I'm staring at him, and then him or she, I'm not sure what it was initially, and we catch eyes, and the deer is just, the little fawn is staring right at me. Face is somewhat hidden behind these long green leaves of this plant. As I said before, very fairly hidden, but doesn't look afraid, and just kind of tilted his head. It was the cutest thing, or he or she, I'm not sure, its head. Let me just say its. I'm not sure what the fawn's pronoun was. I don't know if it was he, she, him, or she, her, whatever they are. I'm not sure what it was. Let's just say it. I'm not trying to be, I just didn't know what it was. Still don't. But it just kind of was sitting there. And the sun was kind of hitting it. It was a nice day. And it was well hidden, but also was enough of, you know, that it could get away if it needed to. It wasn't, it was somewhat camouflaged, but not pinned in somewhere. And it was a beautiful day. The sun was hitting it. So it was kind of in the shade because it was underneath the leaves of this plant and the bush. But it was just laying there, minding its own business. I must not have threatened it too much. I stayed away. I didn't get too close. So it felt safe. And I just kind of said, oh, okay, little fawn. I hope you stay safe here. And I thought, now we do get deer in our yard every so often. We don't live right next door to a forest preserve, but we don't live far from one. And I think I may have told the story several times that we oftentimes get a lot of deer in our yard. Sometimes, you know, and a lot, most of the times they're fully grown deer and they're feeding. As I said, we have a lot of different plants, and they'll eat the hydrangeas and they'll eat the hostas and things like that. But it's not like regularly. They don't come regularly, every so often. But when they come, they stay for a long time. Last deer we had was sometime in the spring, and he was out there for a good 5 or 6 hours just sitting in our yard. Like, okay, I don't know what. So we weren't right near the patio, too. He knew where to stay, so we couldn't use the patio that day. So it was during the day, and my wife was not around. And so I just said, well, let me just keep. Okay, the deer seems to be hidden enough. It seems to be, you know, relaxing. I don't want to scare it. And maybe he's just, you know, taking a rest. We do get a lot of deer in this neighborhood to the point where sometimes they're just walking down the street, just on the sidewalk, which I have to commend the deer, because most of the people in my neighborhood, for some reason, I don't know where this trend started, and I've talked about it before, now it's gotten even worse. People, for whatever reason, aren't walking on the sidewalks anymore. I mean, I don't know if that happens in the city just because there's so much traffic. But if you live in a suburb, do people walk in the street now rather than the sidewalk? What's that about? You know, it started, I think, during COVID, which I don't know, because, you know, everybody was going for walks and there were big groups, and so they were walking in the streets. Because there wasn't a lot of traffic, people weren't going anywhere. You know, the sidewalks are only so wide, so people started using the streets, which to me is still ridiculous because it can be very dangerous. A car is 3,000 pounds, and these people get to the point where they got used to it. Like, well, what? Oh, they looked at you like in the car, like, well, you. What do we think we're going to move for you? Well, this has continued. I see joggers doing it. I've heard the excuse that, well, they have to run on the street because it's more smooth as opposed to the uneven sidewalks. That's a crock. I don't know where this started, but now everybody's running in the streets with cars. We've got bikes now in the town that I live in. They are so bike friendly that there's a sign that says bikes can use the full street, not just a bike lane, the full street. There have been times when I have been driving my car behind someone on a bike and waiting for them to either get to the corner or whatever, but they don't pull over. They don't pull to the side. They own the street. It's amazing. I'm not sure where this all started, but I still think cars are the first priority in a street. But for some reason, at least in the area where I live, and now we've got young kids that are walking. They see their parents doing it. You have to understand, parents, you know, your kids watch you. I don't know. There's something, once again, I'm not a parent, so I don't know where this, I don't know. I get it. But, you know, be aware that your kids are watching you. I'm not sure where in the parental mind, it's okay to then do irresponsible things. Parents, when kids are small, are very diligent to, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this, don't do that. Watch both ways. Don't walk in the streets. Don't lie. Don't steal. Don't cheat. You know, there's when there's a kid being raised in their early years, I'm sure all we hear is don't, right? But then suddenly the don'ts stop, because when they're adults, the adults do everything they tell their kids not to do. The adults walk in the street. The adults don't look twice when they cross. The adults cheat. The adults swear. The adults smoke. The adults drink. I don't know when does an adult say, well, now my kid can just be irresponsible like an adult. I don't know when that happens. But somehow they let their guard down. Because the parents do exactly this, the exact opposite of what they keep telling their kids not to do, and their kids see that. How could you tell your kids to be careful when you cross the street and then you're walking in the street with your friends? Oh, well, I can do it because I... No! What, you don't hear people get hit by cars? It's irresponsible. Now people are walking their pets in the street. At least in my neighborhood, I don't get it. Now they're walking with three dogs in the street, in the middle of the street. What is the point of this? What happened to sidewalks? I don't know. All I have to say is I have more respect for the deer than I do for many of the people in my area here, because the deer, at least, when they're walking in the neighborhood, the deers are walking on the sidewalk. They're actually using the sidewalk. They're being more safe than the quote-unquote responsible human adults. I give more credit to the deer than to many people in my area and in my neighborhood, because the deer are not walking in the street irresponsibly without a care that there's a car, 3,000-pound car, that could run over them in 2 seconds. And not only are they walking in the middle of the street, but they're as if the car is the nuisance. The car, the street was made for the car. The sidewalk, thus the term walk, is for pedestrians. I wonder what they would do if I started driving the car on their sidewalk. I mean, why can't I? If you're going to walk in the street where cars are supposed to go, and the sidewalks are getting no use, then I'm going to start driving my car on the sidewalk, and let's see what happens then. Then I want to see the police come after me. Well, you can't drive on the sidewalk, sir. That's very dangerous. Well, isn't walking in the middle of the street dangerous for these pedestrians? Isn't walking your dog dangerous when there's an empty sidewalk there? I love the deers. They walk on the sidewalks. I swear to God, they walk on the sidewalks. The deers have more sense than the humans, at least in my area. So anyway, we have quite a few deer, and they do. And to get into our yard, I'm pretty sure. I mean, I don't really see them. I don't see it until they're in the yard. I think they have to come down my driveway. They're that smart. They walk down the sidewalk. Good for you. Down the driveway and into the yard. And then it's like a smorgasbord. I'll have a little hostas. Oh, there's a little hydrangea over there. Maybe I'll go back for the hostas. And what's this little spiky little green thing? And I could see the little bites. Hasn't been so much this year, in the spring or early summer so far. We'll see. But anyway, so there's this deer. Small fawn. Not a deer, a fawn. And it's kind of, very quietly and very serenely and very stealthily sitting in, this little area by the garage, hidden. I don't even think it was, I'm looking around, I didn't even see it eating very much. Like it wasn't, I didn't see, it could have eaten the leaves that was almost covering it. Wasn't eating, just kind of sitting there. So a couple hours later, I went back out there. And sure enough, still there. And I'm like, okay, well, now I'm a little worried. Because I'm like, well, geez, is this fawn hurt? I mean, first of all, where's the mother? You always see, like, when you're driving around by a forest preserve, you always see the mother with the babies. So now I'm getting a little concerned, not overly concerned yet, but a little concerned as to, wow, I mean, this fawn has been sitting here now for several hours, and it may have been here longer than that. It was before I discovered it. Who knows when it got here? And so I once again, though, but it was very peaceful and calming. I wasn't afraid, wasn't trembling, so I left it alone. It seemed safe. But I began to get a little concerned about its well-being in that, you know, is it lost? Is it hurt? Is it sick? Because it just seems strange for this fawn to be hidden in this corner by the garage by itself for such a long time. And I remember when we had our cat, a previous cat, the beloved Thames. Still love Tammy so much. And I remember toward the end of her life, when she wasn't feeling as well, she would get very isolated. And that was kind of the first hint that there's something, you know, physically going on with her. She would hide away a lot. She was always very around the house, and suddenly she was going underneath, you know, coffee tables or in corners or behind chairs and just staying and wouldn't want to be isolated by herself and just sleeping a lot. And so, and after a while, I became concerned, and then sadly she passed away soon after that. So now I see this fawn kind of doing the same thing. So I'm a little concerned. So about an hour or so later, I go out. Still there. Seems like it hasn't even moved. You know, and now I'm like, wow, this thing hasn't eaten in a long time. I mean, we've got this smorgasbord of plants. We know that the deer like that. This fawn is sitting right next to a plant, in fact. I'm not seeing any of the leaves still bit. So I'm actually getting concerned. So now it's early evening, around 5 o'clock. And I had taken a picture of the fawn and sent it to my wife during the day. And you know, fawn posed nicely, was kind of hidden, but a nice little pose, looked right at me, looked very trusting, did not look afraid, but I was still concerned as to why is this fawn by itself? Why is it hidden? As I remember our cat kind of being isolating. It hasn't eaten, from all I can tell. And there's no parent to be found. I mean, what do we do? So now my wife came home, and so I brought her back there, and sure enough, the fawn is still there. And just sitting, just like it was. So now it's like, you know, well, I mean, now what do we do? Do we call somebody? Do we call the village and say, "Hey, there's been a very, you know, a deer problem to some extent. There's been a lot of deer, you know, on and off." So, I mean, I know that the village is aware of the deer, and if they don't have the services to do something, they certainly would be able to. To refer me to some kind of a service that might be able to do something. If, in fact, this fawn needs help. If it is sick or in distress or lost or whatever the story is. So my wife saw it and we were just like, yeah, well, I said, well, it looks, I mean, it doesn't look scared or anything. Doesn't, you know. And so my wife, so I went out there three times. And always, you know, kept my distance. I took a picture, no problem. Well, my wife, you know, she got a little too close, I guess. Still not, still far, but enough where the fawn felt a little afraid. And so we got up and ran a little, at least out of that spot into another, and then away from us, still in the yard. So we knew, okay, it was actually maybe that was a good thing that happened. Because we saw that it wasn't hurt. It wasn't like it was limping. He reacted quickly. So it's like, well, okay, he looks like he's okay. But still, we don't know. Is he lost? He or she lost? Is it lost? And And can it take care of itself? Is it not eating because it doesn't know what to do? Did it get lost? Did the mother get hurt or some reason? Why is this thing by itself? It looked a little too young to be by itself. But now at least we knew with the speed that it jumped away from us, didn't leave the area, stayed in the same area, just got away from us a little. At least it looked healthy and okay. Wasn't any kind of physical distress, but we're still worried, is it on its own? And how long can it survive on its own if it is? Because it still looked a little young. So we left and said, okay, just let him stay in the yard. Don't let him get comfortable again. So then my wife went online, and once again, you know, it's amazing the amount of information and the instant access that we have to information. You know, as much as I bemoan the internet and social media, and I think that it's, you know, it's done some detriment to our culture. I don't think that's I'm not out on a limb here. I think a lot of people agree with that. But at the same time, what's a shame is that we've allowed it to do harm to our culture, because as an entity on itself, doing what it's supposed to do, the delivery and the free and open access to such a variety of information, the internet is maybe one of the greatest inventions man's ever made. And yeah, I know we went to the moon. I get it. And we've got all these amazing, you know, drugs that can help, you know, fight disease. Don't get me wrong. You know, we've invented quite a few amazing things, but my gosh, we take this internet for granted. And when it can be used for good, it is an amazing tool. When it's used for bad, it's an amazing tool in a bad way. But so, you know, here we are, just kind of concerned. This fawn has been in our yard now, at least from my standpoint, for a good 7, 8, 9 hours. And, you know, where's mama? Where's papa? Where's anybody? You know, thankfully it looks like it's healthy, but we don't know if it's been abandoned, if it's lost. What, you know, what's the story? So my wife, once again, it's amazing. You go on and you just hit, you know, a couple of key phrases. And so my wife, I'm not sure what she wrote in the, you know, in the search engine line, you know, a fawn being alone or something, baby fawn without its mother. I'm not sure. Baby fawn is kind of a the same thing, right? But I'm not sure what, you know, I think she may have put like baby deer alone or something. And boom, right away, there's this thing pops up and it says, you know, something to the effect of, if you see a fawn alone, even for several days. Now, we were concerned that it was several hours, you know, 9, 10 hours. Or, you know, 7 or I'm not sure when he got there. I mean, from far as I knew, it was there at least 6 or 7 hours. It says, you know, even if you see a fawn alone for several days, leave it alone. Leave it alone. It says the mother is probably feeding or somewhere nearby. The female deer nurse their fawns infrequently so that they're not always around the young deer, so that predators can see them. And so it's not uncommon for, it says, for fawns to be left alone for 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, even 12 hours at a time. And so I was like, wow. So for all we know, because as I said, I didn't know, the mom may have brought this fawn to our yard and hid it in this spot. As I said, it was well hidden. It was not very obvious to see. It was hidden behind this bush and this plant in the corner by the corner of the garage. I didn't see it immediately until I turned around. It was kind of well camouflaged. And I was reading somewhere else, and to stay hidden from predators, the deer sometimes spend their first month or so on their own. And so I was like, well, okay. Mainly it's a way to keep them away from predators. They're hidden. They're camouflaged. And so so we like, okay. So we saw the deer in the yard, and then we saw it go and sort of hide behind another bush somewhere. Still in the yard, not in that same spot. So I don't know if the mother brought the deer to our yard and found that original hiding spot, or maybe this deer was just out on its own and found this camouflage spot, this comfortable spot that was hidden as well as, you know, in the sunlight. But when we scared it, it moved away, but we've got a lot of other foliage and bushes and things like that in the yard. So it found another spot. And so we just left it alone. Well, about 2 hours after that, guess who comes back? Mama deer. And my wife starts, you know, I was in the other room and she's looking out the kitchen window and she says, "The mother's here." Right, almost right on schedule. I mean, as I said, I don't know when this little fawn first came into our yard and found it, but now it was about 7:30 in the evening. I know that I saw this this fawn at least around 10 or 11 in the morning. And so it's about 9 hours later now. At least from when I saw it, who knows how long it's been. And sure enough, there's mom and then the deer. And now the fawn is feeding off the mom. So this must have been a fairly young fawn. And that's why I didn't see it eating on its own in terms of eating the foliage that it was surrounded by or as it was laying in that spot or walking around our yard and eating it, because perhaps it wasn't even eating solid food. I don't know the whole development of a fawn, but certainly we even took pictures. It was feeding and nursing on the mother. So it had to have been relatively young. And so they were in the yard for a while and then they left. We just let them be, and it got dark. They were there until after dusk. You know, the sun went down about 7:30, 7:45, and then they were still in the yard, and it got dark. And then I believe when it was dark, that's when they left. And then we didn't want to go out there and shine any lights on them and scare them. We want them to feel, to some extent, this is a safe haven for them. You know, if I don't want the whole family to move in. I like having my access to my yard, but I certainly don't want them to feel like this is a place that they need to fear. So we let them be. It got dark, pitch dark. We didn't turn any lights on in the yard as well, and just let it get naturally dark with the sunset, and then they were gone. And then the next day, didn't come back. Who knows where? And haven't come back since. It's been a couple of weeks. But it was such an interesting little slice of nature, right, literally, in the backyard, to have seen the way this works. And as I said, when we went online to read about it, it's like, okay, well, don't worry, you know, leave it alone. A lot, because it said a lot of times people will be concerned, like we were, and they will call somebody, and then, you know, they'll somehow, you know, move it, and now the mother doesn't know what happened to her baby. As I said, according to the thing online, it said just, you know, let it stay for even for several days. I would have been concerned if it was several days, but most of the stuff that I read talked about the mother coming back, you know, to find the baby, and take care of it, you know, after 10 or 12 hours. And sure enough, almost right on the dot, that's what happened. So clearly, either the two of them came into our yard and mom said, stay here. I'm going to go out for a while. I got to go shopping for some food for myself, and I'm going to go rest, and then you stay right here, and I'll be back. And I mean, I remember my mom telling me that when I was a little kid, stay right here, and I'll be back. And so, sure enough, mom came back, and I'm not sure where they went, when they left, but it was so interesting just to see the, you know, this little slice of nature that happens every day all over the place, and we take it for granted, and we don't really see that happen too much. And it was almost like it was just, you know, it was our own little show of nature. It was happening in our yard, and it was really something to see. And you could see that, you know, when I first saw the fawn sitting, it was by itself and it was very still. As I said, it looked at me, wasn't afraid, but, you know, it just sat very still in that corner, didn't move, and did not move until my wife scared it. I was making a joke. I was like, okay, so this thing has been here for, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 hours at a time. When I was there, it was fine. You've been here for 2 minutes, and you scared the hell out of the thing. But thankfully, it didn't leave because it was told not to leave, I assume. So I'm trying to now figure out, okay, once again, the detective in me, the Columbo in me, says, okay, so what really happened here? You know, how does mom know where baby fawn is? So I don't know if, as I said, I'm not sure if they came to our yard together. And I mean, you know, we all know about animals and scents. It's amazing, not only their sense of smell, but how they leave their scent somewhere and they can follow their scent. I mean, gosh, isn't that amazing? I mean, I can barely even, you know, my sense of smell is not that great, but could you, I mean, that's, I wonder how different the human race would be if we had that kind of a sense of smell. Now, the thing is that, think about the evolution of this. We don't need that kind of intense sense of smell because we have a brain that lets us remember things, right? I mean, if you have this scent, then you're doing that so you can find what, I mean, how great would it be if we had that sense of smell? Think about it. We wouldn't lose anything. We'd always know where the remote is. We would just go, oh, the remote's behind the chair. Oh, the remote's stuck in the cushion of the couch. But we can't, but we have a brain that's supposedly supposed to tell us, well, let's see, I was sitting on the couch the last time I think I had the remote. So it's got to be somewhere. We can logically determine where something might be. So we don't need that keen sense of smell. But my gosh, would it be crazy if we had both the brain power But we also have that sense of smell that has got it. I mean, look at these dogs, you know, that find, you know, drugs and things like that. But I mean, you know, every animal puts its scent somewhere to know where they are, where they go, what's, you know, they mark their territory or they know where they've been. And we have a brain that can think about that and logically do it, whereas, you know, animals are dealing on instinct, and so they need these keen senses because their brain isn't as advanced. They're not going through the logical thinking and rationalization of that. They're going on the instinct of the moment. And so they need those senses, that the sense of sight and the sense of smell, much more than we do. But my gosh, if we had that, it would be a totally different culture. Could you imagine just going walk around? Oh, okay. And then we would think that's normal, right? How crazy would that be? But so I'm trying to think. So apparently, so either mom brought fawn to our yard, she said, hey, you know, this house here has got a nice little driveway. They've got this detached garage, and they've got this nice patio back here. And, you know, you could sit right behind this garage, right? I know a great hiding place for you to stay for the next 7 or 8 or 10 hours while I go out. This will be a good spot. It's very quiet here. They don't have any kids, so there's not a lot of activity going on. It's just the two of them. It's quiet back here. You'll be hidden. You got a nice view of the patio. You're hidden behind the bush and the thing here. I think this is a good spot for you. So you stay here, and I'm going to go out and do my business, and I'm going to come back in about 10 or 12 hours and pick you up, and you'll be hungry by then, and I'll feed you. And then when it gets dark, we'll leave. That was mom's plan. And Fawn followed the plan exactly. So my question is now, if anybody knows about deer, I'd love you to on my Facebook page, let me know. So do you think that, once again, this sense of smell, I'm sure that, you know, deers have an amazing sense of smell and eyesight. They have to. Do you think that either mom brought fawn to the yard, found this little nice hiding place for her or him, kept him there, now marked that spot with either the fawn scent or her own scent to know where she left him or her, and then went out about her business. And then when she came back, started to use that scent and found her way right back here, which she did. Mom came back here. Mom came here. So my question is, did mom bring the fawn here, or did fawn just, you know, did mom say, I don't know where mom and fawn live, but did mom say to fawn, go out and find some spot and be safe, and I'll come and get you? And then did fawn leave its scent somewhere along the way so that mom could follow that scent and find it? So that's my question, is I wonder if mom brought the fawn and left it here and then went away, or if fawn came on its own, but mom was still able to track it through its own scent to know where it was. That I'd like to know. I have a sense that I think mom brought the fawn here. That would seem easier. But at the same time, I don't know how the deer, you know, how they work. Maybe the scent is so strong. But the only thing that I would think of is that if mom is protective of the fawn, I don't think mom would leave the fawn alone to find a place on its own to hide. I think mom would be with fawn leave Fawn, mark the spot, mark her trail, and then know how to get back. That makes the most sense. But who knows? But all I know is that the Fawn was there for several hours, peaceful, hidden, doing what it needed to do. And at the end of the day, after Mom got all of her errands done, whatever Mama Deer needs to do, she got all her errands done and came back, found her fawn, fed her fawn, stayed in the safety of our yard. And then when it got dark, off to wherever they go to sleep and to the next yard and whatever it is. I'm going to keep looking to see if the fawn comes back. It'll be interesting to see. I don't know if it was. I know that they were, we looked it up, and it's hard. It was hard to tell because we want to get too close. But apparently, there are some markings on a male fawn or a female fawn to see what it was. It seemed to me, and it's hard to tell. I mean, because you know, it doesn't have any horns, so it was hard to tell whether it was a boy or a girl. But it was an interesting little 12-hour odyssey to have this little moment of nature. It was almost like we had our own little nature show. You know, when you're clicking by the stations and you see a little nature show and you sort of stop, you might be looking for an Andy Griffith rerun or a Dick Van Dyke rerun or a Honeymooners rerun or a Sanford and Son rerun or a Columbo rerun or a game show or whatever it is. When you're going down on your program guide, and then all of a sudden you see some little nature show, and you see a mother with a little baby, whatever the animal may be, and you sort of stop on there because it is always, at least from my standpoint, it's always fascinating to see the way nature works, and especially this inherent motherly instinct, and the fathers too, but mostly it's the mother instinct. The mothers raise most of the babies in most of the animal kingdom. And we had that happen right in our yard. You know, and it was like we had our very own little, you know, Jack Hanna show or Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom with Marlon Perkins right in our yard. We had this little fawn that sat there for 7 or 8 hours, and then Mom came, and they frolicked a little, and she fed off of Mom, and they stayed in the yard, and it got dark, and then it got real dark, and then it was pitch black, and then they were gone, and the show ended. And so it was kind of neat that even though we live in this urban setting, that we had this little episode of nature, of a normal day in the life of a deer and its fawn. And it just so happened that for whatever reason they chose our yard to show us a little slice of their life. You know, the animals are always observing us, right? We're the main activity. We're the ones driving cars, running around. We're always around there. They're always watching us and observing how we go about our day. And so this was kind of cool to have this happen right in my backyard for the deers to say, hey, this is how we live our life. It's about time you watched us for a change. And so hopefully our backyard is a safe haven for this deer and this fawn. And who knows? Maybe they'll come back and maybe we'll see this fawn grow up to be a buck or a doe. And maybe we'll see this. Maybe they'll like. It'll find our yard so safe that it'll come back here again as it continues to grow. I hope so, because it was fun to have a little bit of nature right in my own backyard. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNradio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. And don't forget to tell your friends, tell your family, tell anyone who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. Hope you enjoyed episode number 421. I'm Jim Toronto. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, from the end of my mind to your ears.